Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game here on this Thursday. We're at Hermitage Golf Course for the 615 Open, the fourth annual 615 Open. Of course, it is presented by Gary Force Acura and Atmos Energy and benefiting Folds of Honor, so really looking forward to that. We say hello now to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. And, Greg, one half of the Stanley Cup Final is set. The Florida Panthers going to their third straight Stanley Cup Final. Who will they face? Maybe we find out tonight. But Florida seems to be clicking on all cylinders right now.
Yeah, they figured it out in the second period, that's for sure. It didn't look so good in the first period last night where they got down 2-0. But, you know, the thing that they all said was that in the locker room between the first and the second period, the mantra really was, let's just get one and see where it goes. And that's kind of in their mindset, I think, in a lot of these games where they know one goal could lead to two goals, could lead to three goals. I've said it before. They're the most blood-in-the-water team I've ever covered, like where they score one goal and they're relentless after that to try to build a lead. And, you know, so they get three in the second period. They recover nicely, and then they, you know, manage to kill off the penalties they need to kill off, including one in the last 3 minutes of regulation to advance to their – third straight cup final. And let's not sleep on how historic this is, man. Like, this is the first time we've had a team advance to the Stanley Cup final in three full seasons, not COVID impacted, since the Islanders dynasty in the 1980s. So this is a hell of an accomplishment for Florida.
So a friend of mine asked me last night, if Florida wins back-to-back Stanley Cups and having made three straight appearances, does that make them a dynasty? I've always kind of viewed that you got to win it three times, but you make a really good point when you talk about what the Islanders did.
Yeah, I mean, the dynasty debate, though, is an interesting one, because I do think you need to win more than two to have a dynasty, or at the least, you know, make maybe if you make the cup final like four or five times. Like, I do think that Chicago came something close to a dynasty with their run that they had in the last decade. And, you know, the Devils won three cups from 95 to 2003. I don't know what you call that. They also made a cup final. They lost to Colorado in that instance. So I don't know. It's hard to really define what a dynasty is in a salary cap era, but what they've done is probably something close to it, and they're not done yet. I mean, you look at the age of this team, you look at the contracts that they have on guys that are going to be here for a long time. I mean, as long as the center holds and they have Barkov and Tkachuk and Reinhart and some of these other guys, they're going to be all right.
I think watching them, especially earlier in the year, there was a thought of, okay, there might be some fall off here. How much has the additions of Seth Jones and Brad Marchand kind of upstarted that and changed that? Because I feel like that they've made a pretty big difference.
So it's interesting that there's been a lot of talk. I've been on the series the entire time about, you know, the idea that you need to infuse your lineup with hungry people, like once you've won before. And, you know, I wrote about this last week on ESPN.com. Seth Jones, Nate Schmidt, Thomas Nosek, a few others, they've not won. And in fact, some of them get a little nervous sometimes about screwing it up for the guys that have won, right, while they're out there playing. But it's adding in guys that haven't done it before, that are doing anything they can to finally lift the cup for the first time in their careers. It helps kind of refresh things, I think, behind the scenes for this team. Marchand's case is really interesting because, you know, everybody on the team has to serve a role. And sometimes that role is as simple as guy who talks to the media so no one else has to. And so they lose two guys from last year's team to free agency, Brandon Montour and Ryan Lomberg. And those guys, every single time you walked in the locker room last year, would be the first ones to step up and talk to us, right? Or go to the podium and talk to us. And by having Brad there, Paul Maurice, their coach, said his ability to just kind of like hold court and be the media liaison for the team means that guys who don't necessarily love doing media or love talking about themselves get a chance to not have to do that. So on top of being a really important third line player, a leader of a veteran that brings all that experience and savvy to the lineup, he's also just good to have in the room as sort of someone who takes the pressure off of other people by being, you know, as mouthy as he is.
ESPN senior NHL writer Greg Wyshynski is on with us.
Greg, I was reading your story on ESPN.com, business as usual. Let me ask you this. If they would have told the Panthers last night, we're going to board a plane, fly to Edmonton, and play tonight, I think the team would have done it because they seem that focused coming off your article.
They are. I mean, I think they'd like a little bit of rest. They'd probably like to see their families. They'd probably also like to get this one guy, Luce Duranen, back in the lineup. He got hurt last night. I think with the rest before the final, he'll come back. He's an important player for them. You know, it was bizarre, to be honest with you, to watch a team win like that. And then, you know, the biggest celebration they had was putting on their hats. And in fact, Carter Verhaeghe said that if they win it a fourth time in a row, they might just keep their helmets on. They might not even put on the hats next time. I mean, they're just so blasé about winning a conference title. It's kind of funny to think about teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs that would, like, you know, literally cut off an arm to try to win a conference title at this point. And the Panthers are just kind of like business as usual about it. I saw Aaron Ekblad, their defenseman, at the hotel earlier this morning. And I just said, you know, it was kind of funny to see you guys be all business-like. And he literally shrugged and was just like, it's just the conference finals. I'm like, all right, well, if that's the attitude that you bring to this thing, no wonder, because they're just so focused on Cup. They're just so focused on being back-to-back champs. It really is remarkable to see how emotional last night's game was, what an amazing achievement it is to win the conference three straight years. And for them, it was Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, so first off, I think they would like this series between Dallas and Edmonton to go seven games. But who would Florida love to face?
It's a really good question. I mean, Dallas if Dallas makes it through this series, if they somehow come back and rally, I mean, their journey to the Cup final will have been one of the hardest ones I can remember. You know, Colorado in the first round, President's Trophy winning Winnipeg in the second round, and then beating Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl while being down 3-1 in the conference final. That's insane. That's a team that is maybe a team of destiny kind of deal if they end up pulling this thing off. In the case of Edmonton, it's interesting because, you know, Florida beat them last year. They obviously took their foot off the pedal and allowed that thing to go seven games. They know what they're dealing with Edmonton. I think Edmonton's maybe a little bit better defensively than they were last year. But don't forget, boys, like, we just saw Edmonton lose a real key player to injury for the rest of the season in Zach Hyman. Top line winger for McDavid, plays on the power play, plays on the penalty kill. Most importantly, one of their most physical players against a Florida team that is, without question, the biggest bully in the league right now. So I don't know who they'd rather play. I think both teams present challenges, but I think they're confident that they can beat both.
Well, with that being said, are you heading to cover Dallas Edmonton, or are you just going to wait?
Yeah, I'm currently at the Raleigh airport. I will be heading to LaGuardia to give some loved ones kisses, probably get a haircut, and then prepare for, I mean, if Edmonton makes it through, man, that's another 5 years off my life, flying back and forth between Fort Lauderdale and Edmonton. That final last year was not easy to cover, and now this time it'll start in Edmonton. So we'll see how it goes. But I don't know. If the Dallas series continues to go where it's going, I might have to hop on that series. But for now, I will get a brief respite from the road.
So you don't think it ends tonight?
I don't know if it will, to be honest with you. I think Dallas has played really well in the last couple of games. They just haven't gotten the results. And then most importantly, they haven't gotten a lead. Now, you know, Carolina lost last night despite getting a lead, but it's such a simple thing that once you get on the board, you get a little bit more comfortable. You can kind of like exhale a little bit. And in the case of the Dallas Edmonton series, I think the biggest thing in the series is that Edmonton has been completely unbothered. Like, they're the most unbothered team in the entire conference final because Dallas has done nothing to make them doubt that they can win the series. They've done nothing to make life uncomfortable for Stuart Skinner or for McDavid or Draisaitl. So, you know, if they can get on the board first tonight at home and it's rocking and rolling a little bit, maybe they get a little more confident. But, I mean, they've just been a team that's overcome adversity the entire postseason. I have a hard time believing that they're going to bow out in five tonight.
Well, I find it ironic that when I go to the NHL page on ESPN.com that Mika Rantanen's picture is there. If he wakes up, then I think Edmonton might be in trouble.
Yeah, and if he wakes up, it usually he's awake for the next four or five games, the way he goes.
Right.
But, again, like the secondary scoring on that team, really they need a couple of heroes to step up. Robertson's been real good the last couple of games. Like overall, they've been on the precipice of really breaking out offensively, but they got to figure out a way to make Skinner's life a little bit more hectic. He's been good, but he's not been great. But again, like they just found a way to overcome moments like this during their run, and we'll see how Edmonton responds to losing a real key player to injury.
Greg, I'm curious, going back to Carolina for a second, how is Rod Brind'Amour viewed now? I mean, he's obviously a good coach. They've been good teams, but they can't quite get there. So how is he viewed?
It's a good question. You know, he made a defense of his record last night after the game insofar as he didn't really think that this team was going to be one that might even make the playoffs. Now, he might just be like poo-pooing it a little bit, but quite frankly, it made me feel better because I picked them to miss the playoffs before the season. So maybe I wasn't all that wrong about evaluating this roster. I think we got to remember that it's really hard to do what the Hurricanes have done, which is to make the conference final, you know, a bunch of times under Rod's coaching. They're not exciting. They don't really like light up the fan bases around the league when they're in the playoffs. But what they do is very effective. And you know, is it just bad luck? Is it missing a few key players? If Rantanen was on this team, would things have been different? I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that you know, it's a really tricky thing to say that hey, we should go in another direction with a coach that just simply keeps you know driving up the playoff revenue that you make every year by going on these deep runs. You know what I mean? So around the league, there's probably questions about still about whether this system can ultimately lead to a cup championship, but there's no question that the system leads them onto very deep runs in the playoffs, and ultimately for their owner, Tom Dundon, that might be enough.
Greg, real quick, I know his time in Nashville was not a lot, but Seth Jones, a lot of people still follow him.
Yeah.
You had a chance to talk to him. I mean, he's 4 wins away from winning a Stanley Cup. That's got to be an amazing feeling.
It's an amazing feeling. He was rescued from the depths of despair in Chicago, which was not a fun place, I don't think, for him to play. He literally, at one point in the season, was like, please let me out of here. I think in Seth's case, though, what's interesting is I never really thought that he was cast correctly as being a number one defenseman. I think his best years were in Columbus, where he had Werenski with him. Werenski is you know, kind of on the same plane as him. And then he goes to Chicago. He signs that big contract, and everyone's expecting to be a Norris guy. And in actuality, I think he's much better suited in the role that he's in Florida, where you know, Aaron Ekblad is pretty much Ekblad and Forsling, I should say, are the top defensive pair. And then Seth can kind of just like be a number two guy, play with Nico Mikkola. And I think he's been really effective in that role. So again, the Panthers are just so smart in how they see the pieces fit on their team. And the acquisition of Jones and having him play that role on this team has been smart. Who knows what will happen if Ekblad leaves in a free agency, if his role needs to expand. But for now, I think he's cast perfectly on this team.
Do you think Paul Maurice gets the credit he deserves?
I give him all the credit as a writer. He writes half my story by opening his mouth half the time. But I think this run really cements him as being a special coach. I think he's pressed all the right buttons. You see last night the way that he manipulated his lines. He took Verhaeghe off the Tkachuk line, put him with Barkov, and lo and behold, that's the combination that ends up winning the game. I think he's done a really masterful job of understanding the stakes and keeping his team focused. But again, his job is easy in the sense that they've got such a competent veteran core. It all starts with Barkov, who never gets the credit he deserves. He's never mentioned with McDavid and Draisaitl and McKinnon and Matthews and all these guys that put up great numbers, but he's every bit the player that they are. I mean, you saw that if you watched the game last night, the play he made on the game-winning goal, just like 8 guys in the league that can do that. And he's one of them. So with Barkov as the leader, both on and off the ice, I think Paul's job gets a lot easier, but that's not to diminish the job that he's done in keeping this team focused and really understanding what he needs to do lineup wise to make this team advance as far as they have.
Well, Greg, we will see how it all shakes out in the West and look forward to seeing that final. But thanks so much for doing this. We'll talk next week.
Anytime. Thanks, boys.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here on the program presented by Old National Bank. Get old. We'll have more coming here from Hermitage Golf Course for the 615 Open. Chase and Big Joe presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.